Trib Live is made possible by AT&T, IBC Bank, NRG, and Christus Health.
Please join me in welcoming the Honorable Debbie Riddle. Either way, or up here is fine. So good to see
Thank
you.
Thank you.
May I put you right over here?
Yes.
Very well.
Yes.
Thank you. Well, thank you for coming.
Okay.
It's great to have you.
Well, thank you. It's good to be here. Thank you.
A lot
you.
Of friends in the audience, I'm sure.
I know. Everything is better in Texas, and so
well,
yeah.
We can agree on that absolutely.
Absolutely. We
love that. So let's talk about that CNN stuff, since I think what is most fresh in people's minds is your appearance on Anderson Cooper. What happened? There's been so much discussion of it, so much attention to it. I want to ask you from the inside of that, what exactly happened as you view the appearance on CNN?
Oh, man, does anybody know what getting blindsided means? Yeah. When Anderson Cooper's office called my office and asked if I would come on, it was regarding illegal immigration and women coming across our southern border for the sole intent of giving birth here so that the children would be little American citizens. And they said that they had a video of interviewing a woman to that effect. And so that's what the whole thing was about, and are supposedly about. And when just to give you the inside scoop, when the producer called for the preliminary interview, we talked about that and talked about their information and stats, and I did too, because we were all to be on the same page. And then right at the end of the conversation, he said, "Do you know anything about these tourism babies?" And I said,
terrorism babies.
No.
Tourism.
Tourism babies. Terror babies was not my term. That was their term they made up, I guess, before we went on the air. But he said, "Do you know anything about these tourism babies, women that come over on a tourist visa?" And I said, "Yes, I'm familiar with it. I refer to it as vacation babies because they come over ostensibly on a vacation." And he said, "How do you know about it?" And I said, "Well, I've got some friends, retired FBI folks, we've talked about it, and then there's been some things on TV." Now, time that. That took, what, about 10 seconds?
Not long.
That was the whole conversation on that. The whole rest of the conversation was what the program ostensibly was to be about. And so when we went on the air, I'm just being very candid and a little bit vulnerable right now to you. When you're stuck in a room, something about half the size of this stage, you're sitting there with this background, and there's no monitor, no TV, you can't see any body language, there's nothing you can see. All you're looking at is a black box and a thing stuck in your ear. And then all of a sudden, they're coming on with this terror baby thing, which I'd never heard. It was like, what? And to be quite honest, it's a little bit like walking into a boxing ring and getting slammed in the face the first thing. And it takes you a minute to kind of get your footing and get your equilibrium back.
But you did know that you'd be boxing that day, didn't you?
Yeah, but I didn't expect a knockout punch because, and I'm going to just expose a little bit more vulnerability to you, it never, ever occurs to me that somebody's going to stand there flat-footed on the ground and just flat-out lie and not tell me the truth. As my daddy used to say, crawl off a greased flagpole when they could stand flat-footed on the ground and tell the truth a whole lot better.
Who lied to you?
I believe that the Anderson Cooper folks did, and that this is what the whole thing was going to be about,
right?
Regarding the southern border. They had a video and everything. And this conversation that I had with the producer was off the air, and that was a little part right at the end. We were about to hang up. And he said, oh, got one quick question. I later learned that that's kind of a trick, so y'all remember that, okay? Take it from my bad experience. So I should have handled it a lot better. I don't know what to tell you. Do you ever do anything and you wish you could just sort of turn back the clock? Well, if not, well...
But let me ask you specifically, I mean, leaving aside the question of how they dealt with you from a TV network standpoint, let me ask you about the substance of what you said on the air, which I assume you said and believe to have been true.
Well, when he hit me with it and then kind of kept pounding,
right.
Finally, if you watched it, I said, hold on, wait a minute. This isn't what we talked about.
Right.
Well, when I did that and right. called him on it, he backed up and was like, okay.
But let's talk about what you said on the air. So what you said on the air was that you had been told by some retired FBI officials
in the conversation,
agents.
He said, well, you know, how are you aware of this? And I said, well, I have some friends that are in the
That there were illegal, undocumented persons who were crossing over.
No. In that 15 seconds,
right.
The original intent of the whole program
right.
was to be about the illegal foreign nationals crossing our southern border
right.
for the intent of having babies here.
Right.
That was the intent of the entire program. And then at the very end of the conversation with the producer,
right.
Which was off the air,
right.
and I guess I kind of forgot, you know, wasn't on the record, and he said, by the way, you know, have you heard about, and it's like, well, yeah. And it was so insignificant. Normally, my radar is really up and really sensitive,
right.
as well it should be. But that was such an insignificant just kind of question. It didn't even hit my radar. Right. That's why I was so shocked.
But on the air, you did claim that you had been told by retired FBI, former FBI folks.
Yeah, we had discussed it.
That there was this phenomenon of people who were not legal crossing over for the purpose of...
No. The people that are... that you're confusing the two. The phenomenon is women coming over here on a tourist visa from the Middle East and from other areas for the intent of having a baby here and then going back home.
Right. So you don't believe, so this whole thing about terror babies, you don't believe, in fact, what's been...
How
your remarks on the air have been characterized is that you were claiming that former FBI folks had told you that there was this phenomenon of people crossing over
That's
here.
That's the way they made it appear in the conversation. I had had conversations.
Right.
Now, to be honest with you, I am concerned about national security. I am concerned about people coming over here from other countries that for just the sole intent of having a baby and then going back home. I think that, quite frankly, we do need to re-examine, to take a look at that birthright citizenship. I think we do need to take a look at it. And the reality is this instance
right.
has taken away from the major subjects that we need to be looking at. I got to tell you, I have a genuine concern about the safety and security of the people of Texas and this nation. After 9/11, how can we be complacent? I don't see how anyone can be complacent about having basically open borders when we've got Mexican drug cartels at war. Our citizens are afraid and they have a genuine concern that is going to spill over. That was the intent for the Anderson Cooper thing. So I don't want to get off on a distraction here.
Right.
You know, I'm happy to say that, well, maybe I'm not so happy to say, did I handle that well? No, it wasn't my best performance because I was stunned. And quite honestly, the first 2 or 3 seconds, I wasn't even sure we were on the air
because
it took me by surprise.
I want to be clear, though, that I understand and that we understand exactly what you believe and don't believe because the impression
let's get to that.
Because the impression that a lot of people got walking away from that moment on air was that you believe that there was some sort of a plot for people who are not legal citizens to cross into this country and to have babies leave and eventually come back and perform acts of terror on this country.
What I should have said, and
you don't believe that.
what I should have said is I think there's a possibility for that. And let me tell you, I did visit with an expert, just to make sure I wasn't totally nuts, I guess, Dr. Atticott with St. Mary's University. He is an expert. He's the only one, I think the only law professor in the nation that has facility that they teach, what is it called, terror law. That's what he teaches. And I visited with him at length on several occasions and asked him, do you think that I'm just nuts? Or is this a possibility? Right. And even Dr. Atticott says that this is something that he thinks is serious and we need to look into. But the fact of the matter is, I'm a Texas legislator. This is more of a national issue. I cannot do a single solitary thing except add my voice to saying to the people in Washington, D.C., that they need to be on their toes. Mm-hmm. And even if it's not an issue, we need to look at everything.
Right.
Because, again, after 9/11, do we really want our government to just assume? Honestly, we shouldn't be assuming anything.
Do you believe that the federal government is not discharging, I suspect I know the answer to this, its responsibilities on the border with regard to security sufficiently? We're not doing what we ought to be doing.
How loud can I say no?
Well, let's talk about that. What exactly is the federal government not doing that it ought to be doing, and what would you propose that the federal government do that it is not?
The federal government needs, let me back up. I tell my constituents and I tell everyone that is within the range of my voice all the time, we've got to get our priorities straight. And the number one priority for any elected official, whether it's me or whether it's the President of the United States or anyone in between, that number one priority has got to be, for me, to make sure that the safety and security of the people of Texas is well established. If we do not do that number one priority and do it well, there is no number two priority. Because you see, when the people do not feel safe and secure in their homes, when they do not feel safe and secure in their schools, when they do not feel safe and secure in their businesses, when they do not feel safe and secure going to the corner grocery store or going to the mall, it affects everything. Absolutely.
Well,
everything.
So
for them not, for the feds not to take the safety and security of the people of this state or any other state or our nation seriously, realistically, it is altogether possible today, to put a dirty bomb into a suitcase, walk it across the border, and carry it into downtown Houston, downtown Dallas, San Antonio, or anywhere, detonate it and kill a million people. That makes no sense to have a border where people can just come and go. And I bet you, when you go to bed at night, do you lock your doors?
Sure.
Sure. Anybody here not lock their doors when they go to bed at night? Well, there's a few. But the reality is, a wise, prudent person would lock their front door and their back door. The reason you do that is because you want to have control over who you let into your home.
So what specifically?
And we deserve that as a nation.
So what specifically should we be doing that we're not doing? Specifically, what should we be doing?
I believe that the federal government, and if they're not going to do it, we're going to have to do it. We need to completely secure the border. Dr. Steve McCraw, who is the colonel for and head of DPS, he also oversees border security, was asked in a committee hearing a couple of weeks ago, is our border secure? His answer was absolutely not. He was asked, can the border be secure? And he said yes. I personally, because I sit on Appropriations. I'm the subcommittee chair over Article 5. That is the article that deals with public safety. That's DPS, that's our prisons, and that has to do with border security. I asked Colonel McCraw, what is your definition, in a private conversation, I asked him, what is your definition of a secure border? And he said, when no one comes across our border into our country that we are not aware of. We need to be able to know who is coming into our country. If we don't do that, we're not able to do background checks, we're not able to check health issues, we're not able to check, you know, see if they're pedophiles or
but
whatever.
Ma'am, specifically, let me ask you again. Specifically, what are you recommending that we do that we're not doing, specifically?
Well, that is...
Less rhetoric and more policy, please.
Well, that is one of the things that I have been visiting with Colonel McCraw about. And we need more manpower. We need more tools. I am visiting with him regarding the things that he needs. I am completely committed to doing whatever it takes to get him the tools that he needs.
Funded by the federal government or funded by the state?
If the federal government is not going to do their job, then we're going to have to step up to the plate. Because quite honestly, if you see a child in a swimming pool drowning, are you going to tell that child, "Sorry, can't save you"? That's the lifeguard's job.
Well, what can the state do that the federal government can't? Is it about money? Is it about people? What specifically is the state in a position
think,
and has the capacity to do that?
I think A, B, and C and all of the above. I think it's going to require more money, and I think it is going to require more individuals and possibly some more technology.
Do you think at a time when we have, thank you to Mr. Garrett for his reporting this weekend, potentially a budget shortfall of $21 billion, that there's more money to be spent on border security
I believe that I think that we are going to have to prioritize. I visited with one of my Democrat colleagues yesterday on the phone regarding this very issue, and we were both in agreement that border security is a huge issue, and we're going to just simply have to prioritize. Look, the people of Texas, we are in a tough economic time right now. Every family, unless you know of some that I don't know, every family is having to tighten their belt. It is not a bad thing for government to tighten their belt too. I got to tell you, I sit on appropriations, and I know government will spend every single nickel they can lay their hands on. And the only place that they can get that money is out of your pockets, in your pocket, in my pocket. And we need to cut any and all fat. If it is not absolutely necessary, it doesn't need to be spent, and we need to prioritize. And border security has got to be a top priority.
As a member of the Appropriations Committee, surely you have some ideas about what specifically you would intend to cut. I mean, again, if it's $21 billion, if it's $18 billion, optimistically, if it's $15 billion, if you intend to spend money on border security at the expense of something else, what would you cut in order to fund more border security?
The governor has already asked the various agencies to look at cutting at least 5%.
Right, that's going to get you about $2 billion
We are looking at more. Right now, I don't have absolutely all those details. We are going to be going into meetings fairly soon.
Can you give me one area of the state budget that you think would be appropriate to target as we
It's going to be tough, but there are areas in Article 2, Health and Human Services, quite frankly, that last session we funded knowing with some stimulus money, knowing that when that money ran out, that it was just going to have to stop. My Democrat colleague that I visited with yesterday, we discussed that.
Can you give me an example?
We are all aware of that.
Can you give me an example of
I would rather
thing?
Not now, because these are things that we are talking about and working with. For me to go in and just say, okay, this is it right now, I think would be a little unfair to my colleagues.
And you believe, as the Texas Tribune poll found, we reported this morning, there's no appetite for new taxes or new sources of revenue in this state, with the possible exception of gambling. You believe that we're going to have to get to that $21 billion without new sources of revenue. It's going to be all cuts.
Yes.
And are you concerned that the state's ability to make good on its promises to the people of Texas might be negatively impacted by a budget that is entirely balanced through cuts?
What promises are you referring to?
Well, do you believe that there's $21 billion worth of fat in the budget that's going to come out without an impact on the people of Texas?
I got to tell you, there's going to be some hard decisions that we're going to have to make. We're going to have to prioritize, and those tough decisions are not easy. But you know what? If as elected officials we can't go in and really hunker down, look at what we need to do, and make those tough decisions, then we shouldn't be here. And that's on both sides of the aisle. That's Republican and Democrat. My Democrat colleague concurred with me yesterday, he serves on appropriations as well, that raising taxes on the people today is just not an option.
But leaving aside taxes, there are other potential new sources of revenue, mm-hmm. including, would you support a gambling as a way to generate revenue toward closing the budget gap?
Not with the open casinos and what they're talking about with that. I don't think that that's a viable way to go.
Any source of new revenue in the budget as a member of the Appropriations Committee that you could support?
I'd need to look at that.
Don't know for sure.
Not at this point.
Okay. Two things that are going to come up next session related to the issue that we discussed earlier that you have a point of view on. One is the possibility of an Arizona-style immigration law in Texas. In fact, you've indicated that you'd like to see such a law pass. In fact, you might be the architect of such a law in the next session. Can you talk about why that would be good for Texas?
Well, first of all, I'm not an Arizona state rep. I'm a Texas state rep.
Right.
But I strongly believe that Arizona has every right to make the decisions for their citizens. I think that Jan Brewer has done a very good job. I have personally visited with Senator Russell Pierce, and they've obviously have problems there in Arizona. And they have every right to do. Remember that number one priority I told you to make sure that the safety and security of the folks is well established? And they have done that. And so in the process of making sure that the safety and security of the people of Texas is well established, it is an issue. Let me tell you why. Let me give you some statistics. About 2 weeks ago, there was a interim committee hearing, and Colonel McCraw was talking about the impact of crime and illegal immigration here in Texas. It's serious. In Houston, my hometown, I was born across the street from City Hall, and I love Houston. I've got 10 little grandchildren. I'm concerned about their future and the direction that this country is headed. And Colonel McCraw said that gangs in the Houston area have gone up 70% since 2004. But worse still, since 2004, gang-related crime that is connected with the Mexican drug cartels has gone up 250%. Now, if anybody here thinks that's acceptable, raise your hand. But I, for one, find that appalling, frightening, scary, and to sit by and do little, being politically correct, is wrong.
So you intend to introduce such a bill in the next session?
The bill that I'm introducing, and I'm introducing several bills, does not really replicate, and I've never said that it did, the Arizona law exactly.
Tell us what it does say.
I'm introducing one that it gives an additional tool, if you will, to law enforcement. It's a discretionary tool that they can choose to use it or choose not to use it. In the event that law enforcement officer is detaining someone for a issue warrantless arrest and they deem it necessary, then they can inquire as to one's immigration status.
How is that different from the Arizona law as written? That sounds quite similar, if not exactly like the Arizona law.
Well, that is similar, similar to the Arizona law right. in some respects, but the Arizona law is about 15 pages. This one's about a page and a half. This just deals with that, and it allows the officer to ask that and to verify. They can call ICE and determine if that individual is here illegally. Right. And then if need be, then it would create a new crime of criminal trespass by an illegal alien here in Texas.
You alluded to political correctness. Do you believe that the objections by the Latino community or, frankly, by the community at large to this sort of an approach to dealing with illegal immigrants, is there any basis, in fact, where people are concerned that there might be some profiling of individuals or that there's anything at all that is a concern that you think is legitimate about the effect of this? Because, you know, there's been a lot of controversy about the Arizona provision. In fact, the specific provision that you're referring to that you're talking about bringing here. And I wonder if you understand at all the objections to it.
Give me an, give me a scenario.
An example might be that you have a Hispanic individual who is a citizen of this country who is stopped for whatever the reason and who is asked to, frankly, produce his papers. And if the person's a legal citizen of this country feels that that is an unreasonable request or an imposition, and
this law wouldn't pertain to that.
Why is that?
Because this is regarding detaining someone that would be where the officer, it would be for a crime that would be regarding a warrantless arrest. That's a fairly serious.
So there's no instance in which you believe an individual who might be a legal citizen of this country would be stopped and asked to produce papers or asked about his or her citizenship. You see no situation in which this would potentially involve people who are not illegal or undocumented persons.
Mm-mm. No, first of all, racial profiling is illegal. Second of all, the example you gave me is totally irrelevant to the bill that I'm introducing.
How would you make sure that the people who were stopped and whose status was inquired about were not legal citizens? How would the officers know that?
What does an illegal alien look like? I mean, you know, I don't know.
I don't know.
I'm asking you. What does a person who's carrying around two rocks of cocaine in their pocket look like? I don't know. This has nothing to do with what somebody looks like. Mm-hmm. It has to do with conduct. It has to do, an officer doesn't stop somebody because of what they look like. They stop an individual because of conduct. And the conduct would indicate a crime. No, in my bill and even in the Arizona bill, all of this fluff and puff has gone up about being able to stop somebody because they look one way or another and going with their kids to the ice cream shop. That's a bunch of garbage.
You believe that your bill has sufficient protections against such a thing?
Not only yes, but heck yes. Yeah, you okay. bet.
Are you going to introduce a bill next session as well that would seek to deal with the issue of birthright citizenship? You alluded earlier to the question of we talked about earlier about people coming into this country having children who would then become U.S. citizens. Are you looking to change that?
Well, if I could, I would.
Yeah. Is there anything we can do in the state level? It's really a federal.
I really don't see anything
issue.
That we can do here at the state level.
Right.
If I could, I would, because it's been 112 years since we've really looked at that 14th Amendment. We live in a bit of a different world, and I think the American public is saying, wait, this isn't making any sense. It fundamentally just doesn't make sense to have someone cross our borders illegally or come in as a guest, give birth to a child, and then we give all the rights of citizenship to someone who is either here as a guest or someone who has broken the law coming here.
But there may not be anything at the state level that we can really do about that, that you can do about that.
Yeah, I just got through telling you that.
More of a federal issue.
Yeah.
Let me use the remaining minutes we have to talk about.
But I do have photo ID.
You do intend to reintroduce voter ID?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm going to be reintroducing photo ID.
Right.
And let me tell you, how important I think that is. And if I can share with the group here, last March, I took a delegation of women to Iraq. March 7th was their election day over there. The State Department called and asked if I'm the chairman of the National Foundation for Women Legislators. And they called and wanted to know if we could take a group of ladies over there, other women legislators from other states, to be international election observers. March 7th, I woke up. Soldiers on the roof of the embassy compound where we were staying said that, before I even had my first cup of coffee, that they quit counting at 60 bomb blasts. They weren't big bombs enough to take down a building, but enough to kill somebody or do some damage. There were so many going off, and this is in the green zone, not even that far from the embassy. And we were all sent to various polling locations, and we were there as observers. Now, the last number that I had on their voter turnout was 62%. Those folks took their lives into their own hands to go vote. And we could not talk to them until after they got through. We had interpreters, each one of us. But one of my colleagues in her location, and we all saw the same thing because we got together afterwards and kind of compared notes. But one of my colleagues asked a gentleman who was there with his wife and two small children, "Aren't you afraid for your life coming out with the bombs and the bullets?" And he said through the interpreter, "Well, yes, I am." But he said, "Let me explain something to you." He said, "For the first time, my country," and he did his hands like this, "for the first time, my country is on track for freedom and democracy. And my family and I are totally committed to making sure that we do not get derailed. And if, in the process of voting today, my family and I get killed, we consider that a tax for freedom that we are willing to pay." And that fire in his belly, we saw that all over. And I think at times, we here in America, we're so used to our freedoms that maybe we need to get a little bit more fire in the belly. But the one thing that I saw, and I was so proud of our American troops over there and what they had accomplished, what they had done, and what they're doing, but that is all the more reason that we have got to maintain the integrity of our ballot box.
Because
if we don't do that, then we lose our freedom. And so having a voter ID, photo ID, and doing what is necessary to maintain the integrity of our ballot box is so important and so necessary. And I was even more invigorated and even more enthused about coming home after what I saw in Iraq.
Do you think you can get voter ID passed this session any more easily than you could last session?
Absolutely.
Why do you think so?
Because I believe that, first of all, the people of Texas overwhelmingly want it. The people of Texas think that it is really important. Why would we not have it? You can't go cash a check. You can't get on a plane without your ID. I can't even go into Sam's without my Sam's card. And yet voting, it is a privilege, but we've got to maintain that integrity. And I believe that we are going to have more Republicans, conservative Republicans, that think that this is absolutely necessary, and I believe that we will have the votes for it.
You think you'll have the votes for it this time?
Yeah.
We have to open up for questions, but let me ask you, it's a quick question, yes or no. Will Joe Strauss be speaker next session?
You know what? I left my crystal ball at home.
Are you going to support the speaker, or are you going to support one of the people who's talking about challenging him?
At this point, I'm going to see what options are coming up. I like Joe Strauss. I think Joe Strauss is a good man. There were things that we don't always agree on that, you know what? I don't even agree with my husband 100% of the time.
Is he going to be speaker?
My crystal ball, I left it
home. You left your crystal ball at home. All right, well, let's give Representative Riddle a hand. Thank you for being here. And let's, we ran a little over, but let's ask the audience to many things we didn't get to talk about. I hope we would, but let's ask the audience for any questions, and we have a microphone that we can walk around. Let's take the young woman over here and then this gentleman here.
What do you think about the wall along the U.S.-Mexico border?
What do you think about the border fence?
What do I think about the border fence?
Yeah.
That's a good question. I have been to Israel 7 times. I did go to Israel to specifically look at one trip to see what they do regarding their border, because they do take their border seriously over there. When people cross over their border, it's usually for the purpose of killing. And there are areas where they have fences, and I can tell you the fences have worked. There are areas where they do not have fences, and they use technology, and that works. So I would say wherever the fence works, and wherever people that are experts like Colonel McCraw and others would deem that it works, then I'm of the opinion, whatever it takes, I'm a Texas gal, whatever it takes to get the job done to make sure that the people of Texas are safe and secure. Bottom line.
Gentleman over here.
Where?
Here. Sir.
Hi, Mrs. Riddle. Thank you for coming today. I go to Austin Community College, and I'm very happy with the opportunities that I get there. In 2003, I believe you mentioned public schools as coming from the pit of hell. Could you give us some of the hellish details?
He's referring to a quote that I believe you something that you said at the Border Affairs Committee. Is that
You're
right?
Good. No. In Austin, things can get, and in D.C. too, things. Let me give you some background. No, actually, that quote is wrong. So let me give you the exact quote and the background to it so that you'll understand it. I tend not to hold back. I don't know if you've noticed this.
Oh, I get this impression.
Do you get, yeah. And when I first ran, the Bible says, let your yes be yes and your no be no. And I believe that strongly. People are tired of lukewarm, mamby-pamby folks with devil speak that aren't really saying, you know, what they think, just what's ever politically correct at the time. That kind of nauseates me. So this was my freshman session, and I sat on border and international affairs. Hospitals all along the border were having to shut their doors. One hospital alone was over $60 million in the red for 1 year, and they were testifying. I thought my job was to ask questions, silly me. And so I asked during that testimony, where is your money going? I wanted to know, how much of it is for illegal aliens? How much of it is for indigent care? Where is the money going? Finally, after some teeth pulling, I got the answers. And the answers were, I thought, appalling as to how much money is going, because if hospitals are closing and a large part of that loss is because of folks coming over here illegally, that's unfair to the citizens. That's unfair to the folks that are here legally. So we went, that was in the morning, went onto the floor of the House, and after we adjourned, a gentleman from the El Paso Times stopped me and asked, would you respond to some of your earlier questions? And I said, well, sure. Because you see, I feel that it's my duty to answer questions and speak the truth as I see it, and it's the duty of the press to report the truth. And so he said, don't you believe that everybody, meaning illegal aliens, should get free health care? My answer was no. He said, don't you think everybody, meaning illegal foreign nationals, should get free health care or free education? And I said, no. And I explained to him, I said, We have got to take care of our own first. And I gave them some details in the budget as to what that meant. And I also explained that I'm a grandmother. And if I had it within my capacity to take care of everybody, I don't want to see any child do without. I want to see every child get the best education and have the best future possible. And I don't want to see any adult do without. But the reality is, we have a finite amount of money. There is a bottom to the pocket of our taxpayers. And we've got to take care of our own first. I said, if I'm a mother of three, when my kids were growing up, if I gave away my grocery money and the kids came home hungry and I didn't have any food and it's because I gave it away, that's stupid. Well, he didn't seem to get the concept, and he kept pushing. And I guess I was a little tired, I was a little cranky, had it about up to here. And so I said, where did it come from that everybody, meaning illegals, should get free health care, free education, free whatever? Let me tell you where it came from. It came straight out of Moscow, straight out of Russia. It came straight out of the pit of hell. It is cleverly disguised as being tender-hearted, but in truth fact, it is tearing the heart out of this nation.
She got the quote almost exactly right. I have it right there.
And so that was quoted and misquoted, and to say that I think that public schools come from the pit of hell, that is stretched so far out of the context. I didn't even say those words. But what I was saying is that for us to really take away and water down for our own people here, for just an unending group coming over and coming in, is fundamentally wrong. It is fundamentally wrong. And I think going the liberal, progressive, godless way, I think is fundamentally wrong.
Ma'am, excuse me for 1 second. Are you associating godlessness with liberalism? Is that what I want to just be sure that we're clear on this.
You're questioning that?
Yes, ma'am. As a matter of fact, I wouldn't question the faith of anybody of any political stripe. I'm wondering if are you questioning whether liberals believe in God?
Oh, I think a lot of liberals believe in God, but I also know that there has been a move within our country with the ACLU and with others in wanting to remove the Ten Commandments from courtrooms, and in wanting to take prayer out of schools, and in order, you know, and in removing so much of what we have had traditionally within our country. Do you deny that?
I don't know that I have enough time to go into every single one of those things, ma'am, but let me just be sure that I'm clear on what you're saying, and then we can move on. Are you suggesting that liberals are godless?
No.
But isn't that what you just said?
There is a part of the progressive, secular progressive liberal agenda that has been fighting that, yeah. I mean, I thought everybody was aware of that.
Okay, we have more questions. Let's go over here and then in the back. Sir.
Did I answer your question okay?
Sir.
I'm wondering, it's two questions. When you say that undocumented immigrants get free education and health care, do you believe that undocumented immigrants pay sales taxes and property taxes first? And secondly, what do you say to the Texas State Comptroller who said in 2006 after a study that actually if you just do a fiscal and economic balance, that the tax revenue that the state takes in significantly exceeds the amount the state spends in services provided, and that's not even looking at how much they add to the economy.
Are we going to tell the people that stand in line, that respect our laws, that do what is necessary to come here legally, to make the sacrifices that they make in order to come here legally, that we're going to turn a blind eye to those that come here illegally because it's somehow financially beneficial? That's fundamentally flawed.
But I think the gentleman was actually asking about whether the comptroller's analysis, do you believe the comptroller's analysis is valid?
Yes.
I think that the comptroller's analysis is probably valid, but I think that there are additional things that one has to look at to go with that. But it isn't, there are financial issues involved, but you have to look at, do you think that it is fundamentally okay to tell the people over here standing in line, respecting our laws, I know you're standing in line, I know you're trying to do it the right way, and I know that you're making sacrifices in order to do it the right way. The crowd over here is cutting in line in front of you, but it's okay because it's making us a little money.
Well, but you were making an economic argument a moment ago that there's an economic disadvantage to the system as it currently operates.
Actually, what the comptroller has come down and saying, and I think what we're looking at is she is saying that there has been a bit of an economic boost, if you will, statewide because of the taxes that we take in with that. But it is also acknowledged at the local level, it has been the exact opposite because of the cost in our local hospitals and what is going on locally. So what is happening at the state level is not necessarily happening at the local level.
Do you feel like your question was sufficiently answered?
Not the first one. The first question was, you said that undocumented immigrants get free health care and education. When you say free, does that mean you believe they don't pay taxes?
Oh, I believe when they go to Walmart, they pay sales tax.
Do they pay property taxes?
If they're in an apartment or if they're in a rent house, then that is probably rolled into it. But I don't know that they are paying the full amount that everyone else does. But the fact of the matter, you're still not looking at the fact that they're not here legally, and it is bothersome and worrisome to many people, if not most, that we're allowing people to cut in line and making that okay. Because you're devaluing the effort and what it takes to do it right. You know what? It doesn't take a rocket scientist to understand that cutting in line is wrong. You can take a group of four-year-olds and put them in line right here, and then take another kid and put that kid in front and cut in line. Every one of those four-year-olds will tell you it's wrong. It is, fundamentally.
Gentleman in the very far back.
There was a $602 million bill that was passed in Washington, made it through the House and the Senate, for border security specifically. How much is that going to help us in Texas? And if so, if it does help, is that enough? Is there more needed?
Too little, too late. I'm appreciative of it. Anything that they do, I think, is good. But the question isn't, do we appreciate it? Isn't going to help. The question needs to be, does it get the job done? If the answer is anything other than yes, it gets the job done, then it's not enough.
Can you tell, let me try to come back to something we talked about earlier and I'm not sure we got resolution on. Can you tell me what would be enough in your mind, specifically?
What would be enough is for the border to be secure to the point, as Colonel McCraw said, that we do not have people crossing over that we do not know. It is really important to know who is coming into our country.
But that's a philosophical question. I think this is the questioner's point was very specific. Was the specific legislation and the specific allocation sufficient? If the answer is no, I'm asking you if you can say what specifically would be sufficient in the way of an allocation number of people on the border. Do you have an idea in mind what?
Actually, I'm not an expert on that. The expert on that is Colonel McCraw. He and I are in the process of visiting. I don't know exactly what it would be, but we're in the process
of
looking at that.
So you defer to him, I understand. All right, over here. This is going to be a good one. Go ahead.
Hi, Representative Riddle. In 2003 and 2005, after September 11th, when we were supposed to be vigilant and when we had a Republican president and Republican Congress, you didn't author or sponsor any legislation about immigration. So I wanted to ask why you chose not to work on border security issues then.
In 2003?
And 2005, yes, ma'am.
In 2003 and 2005. 2003 was my first session. 2003 was my freshman session. Actually, 2003 is when I made my pit of hell comment. And I had great concerns about it, but at that point, I did not, I just did not do it. It was not on my agenda. I knew that I needed to get to Austin, kind of get my feet on the ground. There is a learning curve. Corbin Van Arsdale was in my same freshman class. Corbin's right back there. Corbin, isn't there a learning curve when we first got here? I think pretty much. And so I did ask to be on the Border and International Affairs Committee because I wanted to learn more about it. And I had definite opinions, but I needed to see if those opinions were right, and I needed to learn.
There was a question I thought to the side. Let me go in the very far
there's
back.
There's one there where, and there's far back now.
Okay, well, let's go to the gentleman in the far back there and then this woman over here by the window and then over here. Sir.
Good morning, Representative. Just a very quick question. Terrorist anchor babies, nature or nurture?
Wait, I don't understand the question. Give him the mic back.
Do you think that, you said that you, in your... longer version of your answer that you thought there was a possibility that people could come over, have babies, and they could later become terrorists. I mean, do you think that they're just born that way or trained by their parents? I mean, what's the process there?
Oh, I think you know the answer to that. God created people. God created these babies. God created our children. And I think that children are to be nurtured and to be brought up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord is what the Word says. And so there are those that I think in the world that choose to emphasize more conflict and issues of that sort with their children. But the terror baby thing was not my term. Vacation baby was.
Trib Live is made possible by AT&T, IBC Bank, NRG, and Christus Health.